I'm with David Doerr, the ISU Vice President for Figure Skating. Hello, David.
How are you?
Good to see you. Congratulations on your election this summer to, is it your third term as ISU Vice President?
Yes, that's correct.
And what is the role of the Figure Skating Vice President in the ISU?
Well, in the ISU you have the highest body is the council composed of 11 people, and it works as one body in terms of developing the policies and the procedures of the ISU, but it also divides itself into sort of a figure skating side and a speed skating side, of which there is a vice president in charge of each. And you do the specifics, more or less, of the day-to-day operation, not the overall policies of the union, but the daily operations, such as technical situations or venues for figure skating or the directions of that particular discipline.
And do you have an oversight role over the figure skating technical committees?
Yes, I do. It's according to the regulations, but what that job entails is to be in constant communication with the technical committees. I don't necessarily tell them what to do, but I'm there to give guidance if requested and sometimes if required. But basically, I'm just there to encourage them and to see that they follow some kind of process.
At the Congress this last summer, there were a package of proposed changes to the members for the Constitution that proved controversial. What were those changes about, and what was the final result?
We now have two types of changes. We have what I call the technical changes, which come from the technical committees and the sport directorate as a package, and that package can either be accepted as a complete package or parts of it may be rejected, and voting on that is quite simple. These are what we call the pure technical rules. And then there's a second set of rules, which is sort of the guidelines or the organization of the sport. And some of these take the entire Congress, and they do involve entire Congress of figure skating, rather, and they do involve some thoughts. Some of the major changes were, of course, the introduction or the change to the short dance and introduction of that in the ice dancing part, the qualifying round for major championships. To me, in the technical part, was the reduction of the number of elements, which I saw as a critical point.
About the new short dance, of course, this is the first season where we see the short dance as part of the competition. Although it's early in the season, what is your early verdict on the opinion of the of how this new dance format is working out?
I have to freely admit that I was a bit skeptical in the months leading up to it, simply because I couldn't grasp exactly how this was going to work. I think there were people that grasped this. I have since used my time wisely with some of the people that were the inventors or the creators of this and asked them what makes for a very good short dance, a medium one, what makes for one that really, in your opinion, doesn't work at all. Now that I'm listening to them and I'm understanding more the concept, I think it is succeeding. And what I have been surprised about is when there is a good short dance, it's actually really good. And when someone doesn't get the process or the concept, it doesn't seem to work. So my end is now I'm happy. I'm actually would be happier if they would leave the thing to evolve under the current rules that it is for a few years, rather than try to window dress it with other things. I think there's a lot to conceive in the thought, and I would leave it alone.
So do you think it's going to last, or is it just a step on the way to the pattern steps being eliminated completely, or is it a wait and see if the coaches and the skaters learn how to incorporate it into a coherent dance?
I think that's a very interesting question. I think probably it's a wait and see. I would hope that the pattern dances don't eventually completely disappear, because I think they are important to certain levels of education and development of an ice dancer. So therefore, again, it's much like, I guess, the compulsory figures or elements of the compulsory figures. When they were disappeared, everyone said, oh, let's get rid of them entirely. I think now, especially with step sequences and turns, etc., you've had to come back to say there are elements of the compulsory figures which we must retain if we are to be successful in what we're trying to do. I think there's going to be elements of the pattern dances which you're going to have to retain if they're going to be successful in what they're going to do in the short dance.
Another big change in singles and pairs were the restrictions put on repeating features. How have those changes to the content of the singles and pairs features been received by the skating family?
Well, I think by those that were doing the repetitions, not at all. But I think for the general public, I think the most flagrant was the repetition, continued repetition of double axel. I mean, a person could just keep piling points, but you could keep looking at the same jump. I think there's so many things that you're able to do today, and so much variety that you're able to introduce. I think this was, again, another good move. It is restrictive, and you'd like to say, well, everything is free, but basically sometimes you have to put in these implications in here which cause a skater not to have to be able to do something. So I haven't heard anything to the contrary, but I haven't heard anything good either, but I would say that it's being accepted.
Recently, a video appeared on the internet that appears to show a judge at a junior Grand Prix viewing the marks of another judge before deciding on his own. I know you can't discuss the specifics of that situation, but what can you tell us about the process the ISU is using to handle this situation?
You're right. I can't discuss the specifics, and I wouldn't really want to, because that is definitely not my role. But I think what is important is here what I call the principle of two principles. One is, what do we really have the judges adhere to, which is the code of ethics. And there does come a point when you say, how do you apply the code of ethics, and at what point do you think that the code of ethics has not been followed by those people? So that's your first job. I think your second part is the type of video. That this is really, again, the opening up of a new doorway, so to speak, and a new window. And I think what we have to understand is this admissible information, and is it valid information to be used? Because really, if you're trying to zero in on certain situations, then you should have some validity to being in charge of your test. But if this is the type of test that you're using, we don't know whether it's valid. So I think at this particular point, really, what we really have to do is to sort of cut through the technological part of it and see if there can be validity for the future.
Will the ISU be looking at what you said, the implementation of the ethics rule, and whether or not the ethical rules are stringent enough, or do you think they're adequate as they are?
I'm not an expert on this. However, I've had discussions with people that sort of are experts on this. I think, if anything, this kind of points out, we all thought the document in itself was a document in itself that worked. Maybe now we're finding out that the actual wording, or the way in which it is explained on paper, is not as good as we thought. And I think this is what happens often when you write documents or things like that. You think they're good and they're bombproof and nothing can happen to them. And all of a sudden something sort of shoots a hole through it. And I think this causes you to go back and look at the document and say, can this document be improved? So I would say that we have two things. We have to look at whether the document itself is worded correctly, but more importantly is whether the people that have supposedly signed to the document understand what the document implies that they shall do. And I don't know if we've sold that correctly enough.
So at this point, what do you think are the biggest challenges facing figure skating today, and how is the ISU working to meet them?
I think the challenges might be something that people wouldn't really expect me to say. I think that the challenges that are unseen, that are in the future, that we don't know about. I think we're too comfortable with our past and with our tradition of what the sport is and how it's been done. What we need to do is to dream and to be imaginative and to try and figure out what will the people of the future see in the sport, what do they want to see in the sport, and how will they follow the sport. And this takes a much bigger mind than mine, and probably many minds, to be able to do. So I think that perhaps rather than being a sport that is kind of like reactive to its own success and that's quote-unquote the great beauty and the great wonder of the sport, maybe we should start being proactive and start saying, okay, what is it that we may need to do to get out in front of the people to get them to be interested in us?
The recent Winter Olympic Games were held in your home country this year, and how would you personally in the ISU rate the games from the perspective of the figure skating competition?
Uh, oh, boy, I have to be really biased here, because I worked quite closely with the games as technical delegate for the figure skating. So I was very involved for well over 4 years. I would say it was a slow start, because I think with any games, especially one that is working in a community which had a certain opposition from certain groups, and they had a lot of opposition which they needed to overcome, as well as there's something to be said about building a whole bunch of new facilities and you have a new look, and there's something to be said about redoing existing facilities. Sometimes redoing existing facilities is troublesome, because the people that have those facilities think they're perfect and nothing needs to be done. But in fact, we found out along the way here that a lot needed to be done with these particular facilities. So trouble along the way, certainly trouble from the community. In the end of the day, I have to say, I'm going to agree here with what the media said. I think the interesting thing was the city came out to embrace the games. It wasn't about a small group of people following a small particular sport for a certain reason. It was people that really came out to embrace the spirit. I know that I was, in fact, in a hotel that was downtown. And just the feeling, people weren't beholden to a specific sport. They were beholden to a concept or an idea. Haven't seen that in a long time. In the end, the figure skating worked, and the facility, it worked. We got everything that we wanted out of it, but more than that, I think we got the spirit and the idea of the whole Olympic Games.
And speaking of your home country, your countryman Patrick Chan landed his first quad in a competition at Skate Canada 2 weeks ago. Did you get to see it, and what did you think of it?
I got to see it, and I actually was quite surprised how well done it was. I think he's really quite an amazing skater. He brings a dimension to skating that a lot of other skaters are not able to do, but he added this quad jump. Extremely well done technically. Approached it very, very well. Unfortunately, I saw the success of it, but I also saw one that was not as successful, but it was just a flip. But I was very impressed.
Thus far in your experience as vice president in the ISU, what do you view as your most satisfying accomplishments so far, and what are your hopes for your current term?
I think that, not necessarily my most strongest field, but I think the thing that I have accomplished is I've learned to work within a system and an organization to know expectations. It's quite different, actually, from my previous life, where I was in charge of something and could do what I wanted and went in the directions that I wanted. Now I have to be careful to go in the directions that maybe other people or certain people want. I think my best thing has been that I have been able to fold within this system, and it took a long time to understand the culture and the direction of what it has to do, and therefore have tried to respect as much as I possibly can what the president, who has a sort of marketing and television and public persona, I've tried to do his work. So my work has basically been to do the behind the scenes cleanup and organization. Like, I was in charge. Somebody, you can talk about the new judging system as somebody created something, but in the end of the day, somebody's got to get the thing through. Somebody's got to do the dirty work. That's not easy work. That's a mop-up. And I was able to do that. I've been able to do a lot of cleaning up of the judges and some of the education of the judges. Believe it or not, I have to admit, because I had an illness last year and was not in the best of shape, but the introduction of the qualifying round was a real challenge to me, because there was tremendous objection. And I have to have people understand that this is a complete and utter change to the sport and the dynamics of how it will go forward. I can't say it's the most popular thing. And boy, it wasn't the easiest thing to do, but I did it. But I mean, somebody had to do the work. So I think I've been the crew that's done that. Now, my next term, to me, is a little more optimistic and a little more progressive, in that I want, and I have already started, on certain projects which will define, in some respects, the future of the ISU in the community. Like, I want to do this, like, proactiveness that I said. In particular, I'm very big on youth. We need to, and this is a worldwide problem, we need to try and figure out ways in which young people can be attracted to this organization, as every organization is facing the same problem. What is it that needs to be changed or challenged that will attract young people? And are there young people? I believe they are. How can I make them become involved in this? I also believe technologically we have to make huge amount of changes, and I'm going to try and lead that particular direction. So I would say that my challenge to me is to adjust the sport to moving forward to respond to whatever it is that will be in our future.
What do you think is the biggest misconception the public has about the ISU?
That we seem to make decisions in a vacuum. You make a decision and people say, it's hard to understand how people could make that decision. When in fact, I think that we don't know, maybe it's the nature of the sport. We don't really communicate the subtle details of how we came to the particular end. I think in any organization, you never make 100% of the most popular decisions. And if you do, you're not doing your job right, because there's got to be unpopular decisions that you make, because they have to be made in order to move forward. But I think the really big thing is that, and also just what I read a lot about, people concerned about the what I call the lifestyle and the quote-unquote perks of being an ISU. This is not true, and I'm going to defend myself here. I don't have any travel budget. I don't go where I want to. I go only where someone may want me to be at their expense, and when I go there, I offer to work. Like here, I'm here, and I offer to work. But I'm not traveling at end. I do all my work at home, and I work at home, and I work from my own computer in my own house. So the idea that we're living some charmed lifestyle is really, really quite false. I'd love to live this charmed lifestyle, but I don't live this charmed lifestyle. And then come back, decision making. Really, every once in a while we make some strange decision, but to the large, I think people, we cannot get out there and say we made this decision for this reason. But I also think that we have to be seen as making decisions. I think one of the other criticisms sometimes is, boy, that particular item seemed to go right by them in the kitchen, and they never even noticed it. And perhaps we did notice it, and perhaps we're struggling with it.
Many people think that this is your last term, that you're eligible to serve as an ISU officer, but I understand that's not true. What is your situation in terms of your eligibility for a future office?
Well, actually, it's kind of like within the council a little bit mixed up at the moment, because there are some last terms for people. Some council members, including the present president, is on his last term. But I'm, in fact, not on my last term. Age eligible, I have one more term, which clearly begs the question, and what will that be? And I don't have the answer today, but I don't ever like to count yourself out. So you don't ever say, the answer is this, because you need to leave your options open. I think what's important to me is to remember, I only do this, and I only want to do this if I'm going to make some progress, or if I'm going to make a difference, or if I'm going to make a statement. So I think in the course of the coming years, that's really what's going to go through my head, is there something that I can do that can improve the situation, and therefore should I take the steps to make sure that happens?
Thank you, David, for speaking with us today.
Okay, thank you, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you.